Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Dr. Donald Hall is founder and CEO of WellSource. That's a company dedicated to providing health programs that meet the changing needs of corporations, government agencies, and hospitals and health insurers. And he's also an author. The book we're going to talk with Donald about today is 9 Ways to Prevent Diabetes. Welcome to Life Quest.
Yes, glad to be here.
Why did you write this book at this time?
Well, you know, diabetes is one of the fastest growing diseases in the United States. Just reading yesterday, in the last 10 years, incidence of diagnosed diabetes is up by 40% in just the last 10 years. And so it's a real crisis in our country, and also because it causes so much real damage to people's health. It can cause their cholesterols to be high, their blood pressures to be high, contributing to heart disease, damages to the eyes, it damages the kidneys, leading cause of kidney failure. There's just a whole host of things that are really harmful to the person and thus very expensive. And so companies are interested in what can we do to keep our health care expenses down. Well, the good news is there's a lot you can do to prevent diabetes.
My grandmother, Dawn, had diabetes. I can remember as a kid, and she had to give herself injections. She died at a fairly young age, but we didn't hear a lot about it. But in the last decade, we've heard a lot about diabetes. Why is that? Is there are there more of it, or are we simply better informed?
Well, probably both reasons. People are recognizing it more now. We have more of an aging population, and that means more people are in the high-risk range. As we get older, we're more likely to get diabetes. But what we really see is that the risk factors that cause diabetes are also much more prevalent, I think, than they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
We see a lot more obesity. People are more sedentary, I think, than they back when they lived on the farm and they worked hard every day. All of these kinds of risk factors are much more prevalent today, and that's contributing as well.
You've talked about the effects and why it may be on the rise, but I understand there are two types of diabetes. What are they? Can you explain that for our listeners?
Well, sure. The kind that happens oftentimes with children is called type 1 diabetes, and it's an autoimmune disease, and we don't really understand why it occurs, but the body begins to fight its own islet cells that produce the insulin in the pancreas, and your immune system destroys those your body's ability to produce insulin, and
mm-hmm.
so therefore, if you don't have it, you die. And that usually happens in childhood, not really understanding why yet today on that. That's about 5% of diabetes.
Okay.
And then, of course, the larger portion is what we call type 2 diabetes, which generally happens later in life, and it's related to a lot to lifestyle. As you become older, you become sedentary, more obese,
mm-hmm.
eating the wrong kinds of foods. The body becomes resistant to insulin. And so the pancreas tries to produce more and more insulin to meet the needs, and finally it becomes exhausted and gives up, and eventually the person has to again go on insulin to survive.
I see.
So it's two different causes, but the end result is kind of the same thing. The blood sugar levels are high, that damages the health, and you have to have the insulin to control that, or a person would die.
My understanding from reading your book is that you believe that there are certain lifestyle changes that can actually either prevent the onset of it or at least help control it if you're already there.
That's right. Probably the best study that's been done on that was done by Harvard University and the Nurses' Health Study, about 80,000 women that they followed for 15, 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and they looked at their lifestyle. And what they found is they didn't have any risk factors for diabetes. Their risk of developing diabetes in the next, 18 years or so of the study was only one-tenth as much as people who had one or more risk factors.
Really?
So if they were exercising, their weight was under control, they were eating healthily, these kinds of things, they simply didn't get diabetes, even if they had a family history of diabetes.
Hmm.
It didn't seem to matter.
So you've mentioned some of the lifestyle changes as far as more exercise, cutting out the weight, which has got to be linked somewhat when you begin to talk about obesity to food. Are you talking about calorie intake or types of food or what?
Both. If we eat too many calories, of course, we put that extra little weight around our middle, and that's metabolically very dangerous, especially for diabetes. and makes the body resistant to insulin. And when that happens, of course, then that starts this cycle, and eventually the body can't keep up, and the pancreas gives out. So calories is an important thing, but there's also other series of things. We can get into that, the kinds of fats we eat. We find if you eat a lot of saturated fats, a lot of red meat and hamburgers and french fries and hot dogs and things that are very popular in the United States, that also makes the body resistant to using insulin.
I see.
And then we eat a lot of refined carbohydrates, a lot of sugar, and a lot of refined white bread and cookies and cake and pastry and a lot of things that have been highly refined. And those kinds of calories are absorbed very quickly, makes the blood sugar levels go very high. We call them high glycemic index foods. And when that occurs, again, that puts a very big load on the pancreas because it has to produce extra amounts of insulin to handle those large amounts of sugar coming quickly into the body. And so in the Nurses' Health Study, for example, they found four or five foods specifically related to high risk of diabetes. One was white bread, sugar, of course, particularly in the form of soft drinks, white rice, and potatoes, especially french fries.
I see.
Those are all absorbed very, very quickly and raise the blood sugar levels very high. And over many, many years, it just wears out the pancreas. It's not able to keep up. And if you have a tendency towards diabetes, it brings it on.
Carbohydrates seem to be everywhere in our food, but you're saying that is what we really need to cut back on.
Well, only the refined ones. You know, it's interesting. Just reading yesterday in a journal, the people who had the highest carbohydrate intake had a low risk of diabetes, but they were using the right kinds.
Yeah.
And so if you're using fresh fruits and vegetables and legumes and soy products and other kinds of things that have a low glycemic index, whole grains particularly, where they're absorbed more slowly because they're less refined,
I see.
Then that's actually protective. And those people have less risk of developing diabetes.
Now, glycemic, you're talking about how much sugar or glucose that's in the blood?
Yeah, a glycemic index is a way of monitoring how fast glucose in a food is absorbed and how much it raises the blood sugar levels.
Okay.
And you can't tell by looking at a food. You know, you'd look at white bread, for example, you'd think that would be lower than sugar. But in fact, it's actually a little bit higher. The amount of sugar that's in the white bread is absorbed and raises your blood sugar levels even faster than pure table sugar. And so in our classes, we teach people the glycemic index, and it's in the book, of various foods, so they know which ones to choose. The low glycemic foods, less likely to get diabetes. If they eat a lot of high glycemic foods, white bread, refined cereals, sugar, soda pops, we find the french fries, the potatoes seem to be absorbed very quickly. These all raise the risk.
Why is it that smoking enters into this whole picture?
It's an observation that we see in research, and I don't know that everybody understands it for sure. It seems like smoking gets implicated in a lot of things, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it seems to especially damage the little cells in the pancreas that produce the insulin. And people who smoke are more likely to get diabetes.
You've mentioned a little bit about the fats that we tend to get, and there seems to be a raised consciousness in this country and in food labels about fat content and trans fats and all that sort of thing. In Chapter 11 of your book, 9 Ways to Prevent Diabetes, you talk about plant-based foods. Define that. It may seem obvious, but what do you mean plant-based foods?
Well, as opposed to animal foods.
Okay.
If you do look at large numbers of people and you do the research and look at their eating habits, what we find is that as their cholesterol levels go up, which is a marker for primarily meat and high-fat dairy, the ice cream, you know, and the eggs and so on, as that goes up, so does the risk of diabetes. It's a direct correlation. And along with that, of course, comes the saturated fats. On the other hand, if you eat plant-based foods, the research shows that your risk for diabetes is significantly lower. And a plant-based food would simply be, you know, a salad. green beans, peas, lentils, all the different kinds of legumes, all the different kinds of whole grains, those kinds of foods. And those foods all seem to be protective, particularly if they are eaten in the unrefined state. Primarily probably because, one, they're devoid of cholesterol and saturated fat, basically. And number two, they're very high in fiber, and they slow the absorption of sugar, keeps it at a normal level in your bloodstream. There was a study, well, the Adventist Health Study, number two, the second one they've done, about 90,000 people. And when they simply looked at people's eating habits, those who ate primarily foods just from plant-based foods, vegetarians, vegans, their risk of developing diabetes was only one-fourth compared to people who used animal products regularly in their diet.
I see.
So that's an amazing difference, four-fold difference, just eating plant-based foods.
You record a length about stress. Most of us have it. And so how do we deal with that? And why is that a problem?
It's unavoidable, isn't it? But if we get stressed out all the time, if we don't balance with adequate time for rest and relaxation and, you know, bring life back into balance, what happens is that we're under a lot of stress. The body produces hormones, different hormones, help us to adapt, I suppose, to the to an emergency. But if we're always in an emergency, our adrenaline levels are higher. When your adrenaline levels are higher, that mobilizes glucose from the stores in your body, and your blood sugar levels go up. Now, if it's just an occasional, you know, that might be helpful. If you're running from a bear that's chasing you, that might be advantageous. But if we're under stress all the time, then our blood sugar levels will run higher. And again, it puts a little bigger load on the pancreas. And if we have a weakness in that area again, then it's more likely to be brought out. It also kind of goes along with some other things. People who are use cigarettes sometimes, you know, to combat stress, helps them to relax or whatever. And so stress can sometimes cause people to eat poorly and to smoke and to drink and do other kinds of things that add to it. But it directly raises our blood sugar levels, and it's one of the things that might be helpful. It's not a major cause, but it can be helpful in controlling diabetes and controlling the other habits that go along with preventing diabetes.
There's got to be a lot of our listeners who say, well, I'm not going to prevent anything because I already have type 2 diabetes and I'm taking all kinds of pills and my doctor's nagging me. How do we cope with it once we got it?
Well, you know, you might think it's too late and the horse is already out of the barn, but that's not true. Any time that you make a lifestyle change that's going to improve your health, whether you have diabetes or not, it has beneficial effects. Let me give you just a couple of examples. What most diabetics die from is heart disease. One of the things that diabetes does is it seems to raise your blood cholesterol levels. And so you have to be much more careful to keep those cholesterol levels lower. And so if you're careful to avoid a lot of high cholesterol foods, a lot of foods high in saturated fat, eat more plant-based foods that are high in dietary fiber, which also helps your body to get rid of cholesterol out of the body, all of those things will help you to have better heart health. And keep in mind that that's what most diabetics, about two-thirds of diabetics, die from heart disease. So that's one example. Keeping your cholesterol levels lower will be helpful. Another is exercising. Exercise is specifically helpful in lowering the blood sugar levels and helping you to manage it, even if you have diabetes. One excellent study was done where they took people with diabetes and they put them on a walking program, half of them, the other half they didn't. And they watched over periods of years to see what happened. And after several years, they looked at the mortality difference. And those that had a walking program cut their risk of dying from diabetes in half. And so that's a remarkable difference.
Yeah, it is. Wow.
You know, if you can cut your risk in half, why wouldn't you want to get out, walk briskly for 30 minutes or more every day? And so the research is showing that all of these things that help to prevent it also help to control it. Same thing about eating the healthy foods. While they won't prevent it, they help you to manage it so that you don't get the complications. You don't get so much damage from the high blood sugar levels that damage the kidneys and the eyes and your nerves and, you know, all of those kinds of things. And so it does help. It makes a lot of difference. In fact, a lot of people are able to control their problem entirely through diet and exercise and weight loss. If they lose a little weight, they start walking 30 to 45 minutes a day, they start eating really healthy, especially if they eat more of a plant-based diet, cut way back on the saturated fats and the cholesterol, eat whole grains, more fiber-rich foods, and they're actually able to control their diabetes, and many of them. Our research came out just in JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, a couple of weeks ago, showed that as many as 1 out of 10 regular diabetics can get completely off their medication, and 1 in 5 if they're a new diabetic and just been on medication for a short time are completely able to control it just by lifestyle practices. So it does make a big difference.
Your book, 9 Ways to Prevent Diabetes, or if you have diabetes, to minimize the complications, How would you like people to use this book?
Well, you know, a lot of times people think, I don't have any control. I either get diabetes or I don't. Mm-hmm. And it would be nice if someone who understands this could say, look, your father had diabetes, your mother had diabetes, or your brother has diabetes. Would you like to know how to prevent it?
Mm-hmm.
And some of the research shows that you might cut your risk by half or even up to 90% by changing your lifestyle. There's simple things that you can do, and the only complication is you'll be healthier and live longer for doing it. But would you like to learn? And so I think people that would benefit, you know, maybe just giving them the book. It's inexpensive.
Right.
Of course, anyone who has family members and maybe they've seen, I look at my own brother who's had diabetes for several years now, and he's had heart problems and some other serious complications.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to know what I can do, you see.
Right.
And so I was personally motivated to research this and look at it as well.
Sure.
And anybody who comes in that kind of a family situation, they would be the ones that you really want to read this book. Other people who are high risk would be, of course, those who had a family history. But anyone who's overweight and not doing a lot of exercise, they're pretty high risk too.
Right.
And they would do very well to read this book and find specific things that they can do to lower their risk.
And now it's time for some transparency. The fact is that 13 years ago, I was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. Didn't have all those usual health profiles. I was kind of a thin guy and a vegetarian diet all my life, but it seems to have been in my mother's side of the family, and that's when it hit. But, you know, I have really noticed, folks, that if I'm out there playing racquetball, which I love to do, that makes a big difference in my blood sugar. And cutting into things like brown rice instead of white rice, staying away from the white breads, it really does make a tremendous difference in what is happening. And your doctor can guide you, and so can a little book like this. Donald Hall, 9 Ways to Prevent Diabetes. It's available at ABC bookstores, and it's also available on Amazon.com. Is there any other place I left out that you might people might be able to pick
Barnes
this book?
Barnes & Noble has it as well.
Okay.
And if you like to download it and read it on your little Nook, they have it available there as well. So that's available there too.
Dr. Hall, thank you so much for being with us today on LifeQuest.
Yes, I enjoyed being here, and I hope that this book will be helpful in helping people to have a better life and prevent a very serious problem, or if they have it, to live more successfully with it.
We have a few minutes left in our program today. I'd like to tell you about a couple of upcoming interviews, about a couple of books that I found very interesting. The first one is called I'm Too Young to Be This Old. You ever said that? Facing Midlife with Humor, Insight, and Encouragement. It's written by Poppy Smith, who's a British, married to an American, and she was born in the UK, grew up there and in Sri Lanka, Singapore, and Kenya. She's the author of 4 other books. At some point in her life, she suggests, a woman will take time to reflect and reevaluate her accomplishments, her challenges, and what she values as important. And this sometimes occurs around midlife. Children are grown. Maybe there have been some major life changes, death of a family member, divorce, or job loss. And this author and speaker believes that women should welcome midlife with a positive attitude, recognizing it that it's their time to launch into greater personal and spiritual growth. Here are some of the topics that she talks about. Have you ever had this thought, these children are too old to be mine? I've sure thought that with 4 daughters. Or, my parents need me. How should I help? Perhaps you thought, as you looked at your spouse, will you still love me when I'm, well, you can fill in the blanks. Or, where do I go from here? Coming up on a future program, I'm Too Young to Be This Old, Facing Midlife with Humor, Insight, and Encouragement. Another book is by an author I really appreciate and have talked to him in years past. This one is called The Cross in the Shadow of the Crescent. This is an informed response, is the subtitle, to Islam's War with Christianity. And Dr. Lutzer says that Islam is on the rise all over the West, including America. And yet, Erwin Lutzer urges Christians to see this as both an opportunity to share the gospel and, yes, maybe even a reason for concern. At the same time, it opens an incredible door of ministry for Christians, for Muslims normally don't have access to the gospel in their own lands. And here are some of the questions he deals with. How does Islam's growing influence affect me personally? In what ways are our freedoms of speech and religion actually in danger? And how can I extend Christ's love to Muslims that are around me? This is going to be an interesting interview. It's certainly a good book. It's a practical one. You probably have Muslim neighbors, friends, or even relatives. In one of my classrooms, I have a student whose father is Muslim. And so it's an interesting dynamic and things that we need to face up to, not with knee-jerk emotions, but with a careful Christian perspective. I'm looking forward to this interview, as I said, and I know you will too. This is all coming up on LifeQuest in the very near future. Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net or write to LifeQuest at P.O. Box 33082, Knoxville, Tennessee, 37930. I'm Dwight Lainhoff. Thank you.